Last week, our parsha reading, toward the end of it, as you noticed when I held up the scroll, included the Shema. It hit home. It stirred and moved us, or at least it should have. And now, we wait with anticipation for what's next. What more does God have to say to us, lecha, for our benefit? And so this week's parsha begins, as you heard it read, V'haya ekev tishma'un. But just what does that mean? What does it intend for us? Lecha. Unfortunately, and far too often, this text is completely misunderstood. Here's the commentary I read recently by one rabbi. And I quote, "My third grade art teacher was a terror." Quick aside. I had a similar art teacher, but it was in seventh grade. And I swear to you, if students got out of line, he'd take up the wooden gavel that's on his desk and fling it at the student. Very quickly, his students remained completely under control. Back to this story. That was my story. So anyhow, my third grade art teacher was a terror. Her rules were ironclad, and disobedience was severely punished. Quick to lose her temper, she once grabbed a paintbrush from me, and critiquing the stars I had sketched in my rendition of the night sky, she painted directly over them. Another day, as the class was gathered around watching her at the demonstration table, I realized that I needed to go to the bathroom. But I knew the rules. No leaving the room without permission. No interrupting the demonstration. And no raising your hand unless the teacher asked a question. Parshat Ekev, for me, is similarly brutal. The crush of God, the if-then God of wrath and punishment, is overbearing. The choice that God offers in our parsha is not really a choice. Rabbi then quotes the parsha, "And if you do obey these rules and observe them carefully, the Lord your God will maintain faithfully for you the covenant that he made on oath with your fathers. He will favor you and bless you." Deuteronomy 7, 12-13. On the other hand, quoting a later part of the parsha, "If you do forget the Lord your God and follow other gods to serve them or bow down to them, I warn you this day that you shall certainly perish." Deuteronomy 8:19. The God of Ekev expects us to respond to an if-then choice, which is not then really a choice at all, but rather a display of raw power. Quoting another portion, "Bear in mind that the Lord your God disciplines you just as a man disciplines his son. Therefore, keep the commandments of the Lord your God. Walk in his ways and revere him." Deuteronomy 8:5. Reading Ekev, I can't help but feel the same way I did in that third grade art class, constrained by the narrowness of the rules and left wondering what room there is for me to ask questions, to take care of my own needs, or to paint stars of a different sort. End quote. And I'm going to suggest to you that this is precisely how not only this rabbi, but especially many Christian commentators and most Christians, as well as many Jews, tend to view this text. God is seen by many as the cosmic enforcer, that mean old school principal, or art teacher as it was in this case. And Eddie's story illustrates this same point quite well. Young Eddie was doing very badly in math. His Jewish parents had tried everything. Tutors, mentors, flashcards, special learning centers, everything they could think of to help him in his math. Finally, in a last-ditch effort, they took Eddie and enrolled him in the local Catholic school. After the first day, little Eddie came home with a very serious look on his face. He didn't even kiss his mother hello. Instead, he went straight to his room and he started studying. Books and papers were spread all over the room, and little Eddie was hard at work. His mother was amazed. Later, she called him down to dinner. To her shock, the minute he was done, he marched back to his room without a word, and he was back studying as hard as before. Now, this went on day after day, while his mother tried to understand what had made the difference. Finally, Eddie brought home his report card. He quietly laid it on the table, went up to his room, and hit the books yet again. His mother looked at the card, and to her great surprise, little Eddie got an A in math. Now, she could no longer contain her curiosity, so she marched up to his room and said, Son, what made the difference? What was it? Was it the nuns? Little Eddie looked at her and simply shook his head, no. Well, then she replied, what helped with your math? Was it the books? Was it the discipline? The structure? The uniforms? What was it? Her glum-looking Jewish son just looked at her and said, well, on the very first day of class, when I saw that poor guy nailed to the plus sign, I knew they weren't fooling around. Thank you, Eddie, for sharing your story. Anyhow, in a few minutes, we'll look at our parsha from a completely different perspective. And in doing so, we'll discover that the common viewpoint on this text is not what the author intended. This is not our God. But first, in fairness to the rabbi goes on to share an important insight, which I will now share with you. Quote, there are times when we need a commanding God, when we need the structure of a God who enforces rules to get us through a particularly wild stretch of life. There are other times when we feel rebellious, when we know what God expects of us, but also have a need to not do that, to stretch the limits of our relationship to God. There are times when we assert our will, and there are times to surrender in deep humility to that which is so much larger and more awesome than we are. And many situations demand that we hold on to both at the same time. This is why the Shema, the backbone of our liturgy, which we are encouraged to recite daily, contains both a passage from Parshat Ekev, what we read tonight, in its purest reward and punishment, choice that isn't really a choice form, and the V'ahavta passage, which we did recite from Deuteronomy 6, commanding us to love God fully. We need both. Ankelas, the first century translator of Torah into Aramaic, chose an unusual word for Ekev, which is translated as if, for example, and if you obey these rules. Ankelas instead translated it as Chalaf, meaning in exchange for, opening up the distinct possibility that if then is not all there is to these passages. Nachmanides, the Ramban. Nachmanides, in his commentary on Deuteronomy 7:12, takes Ankelas' translation as the grounds for a new interpretation. Ankelas thus made it an expression of roundabout. In other words, the end result of a series of events. Derived from the verse, and hey akov, which sounds an awful lot like Akev, if you're listening to it. Hey akov. The winding shall be made straight. Isaiah 40, verse 4. By the way, that's last week's Haftarah. That is, the winding road that goes roundabout will become a straight, level path. Life is a journey, end quote. And let me add, and God knows full well that our roads will have numerous bends and curves and turns in them. And remember also, Deuteronomy 8:5 is part of our context for our parasha, and intentionally so. Remember? Bear in mind, perhaps a better way to translate it, know in your heart that the Lord your God disciplines you as a father does his child. By the way, another rabbi said something very similar in Hebrews chapter 12. And no, it was not the Apostle Paul, in case you're wondering. In case you're wondering too much about that, sign up for a course at the yeshiva and we'll straighten you out on that one. Now, as frequently translated and as reflected in this commentary, Deuteronomy 7, verses 12 and 13 reads, if you pay attention to these laws and are careful to follow them, then the Lord your God will keep his covenant of love with you as he swore to your ancestors. He will love and bless you. Although, I'm going to suggest, often translated if, this term is far richer than its usual translations. Moreover, it's not even the normal word for if. That term is im. And you didn't hear that anywhere in the text. It's akev. Because in fact, there is no im anywhere in our text. Actually, akev is much better translated because, as in fact the Ramban suggested. Just to give you historical perspective, the Ramban, 1200s. Anyhow, as he suggested, it's better translated because or when. The idea here appears then to be an encouragement, namely that the people, that we, will in fact follow God's instructions and therefore will reap the benefits that God has committed himself to lavishing on us. Moreover, according to several rabbinic commentators, some earlier now than the Ramban, going back to around the 900s, Sa'adia Gaon, Ibn Ezra, and so forth, according to a number of rabbinic commentators, there's also a suggestion or a connotation of reward inherent in the wording that we find here. So the thought in our text more fully would read like this. Here is the reward when, or better perhaps even, whenever you pay attention to these prescriptions. And then later in chapter 28 and again in chapter 30, the same idea is reinforced. When Moses lists the many blessings God will rain down on the people whenever they follow him. And in tonight's parsha, tonight's reading, tonight's portion, the rewards are great as well. Remember the text says he will love you and bless you. Now, interestingly, these verses sound almost identical, at least they should sound almost identical, to Yeshua's statements in John chapter 14, verse 21, where Yeshua says, whoever has my commands and obeys them, that person is the one who loves me. And the one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love such a person and show myself to this person. Now this is the ultimate in blessing. The personal manifestation in relationship to us. Of both the one whom we describe as Avinu Malkeinu and the one whom we acknowledge as our Messiah. In fact, there's a very strong likelihood, I'm going to suggest, that Yeshua is actually referring to Akev at this point in the Gospel written by Yochanan HaShliach. Quick aside. Those of you who bothered to take the course last year at this time in Gospels, and if you didn't, shame, shame on you, you will realize that Yochanan, as he writes his Gospel, shapes his Gospel as an exposition of a number of the texts as they were read in the synagogues weekly, particularly as they related to the holidays. But into that commercial, no, actually that wasn't. I was laying a guilt trip on you for not taking the course last year. So take the course this year. End of commercial, back to an end of guilt trip, maybe. Interestingly, there is a further dimension to this term, akev. It also means heal. And on the significance of this meaning, the Arskol Chumash perceptively notes, Arskol is perhaps the most popular at this point in time of the traditional Chumashim or Chumashot, whichever one it is. I quote, midrashically, the word akev alludes to the sort of commandments that people might regard as relatively unimportant. So they tend figuratively to tread on them with their heels, hence the term akev. Thus the Torah assures Israel that if they are careful to observe even these neglected or least commandments, they can be certain that God will reward them, end quote. The ones you would tend to tread on with your heels. Now this too sounds just like Yeshua, as he reminded us in Levi's Gospel, Matthew 5:19, and I quote, anyone who breaks the least, or neglected, of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices these commandments will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now there, that's quite the reward, being called great in God's kingdom. Clearly, God wants us to be very careful to follow him fully. Additionally, there's an interesting connection of our parsha with Jacob. Akev, Ayin Kof Vav for you Hebrew students. By the way, it's spelled the same way for those of you who are not Hebrew students. Akev is also part of Jacob's name. So his name more accurately means, may he, talking about God, be at your heels, as in your defending rear guard. We talk more about that when we talk about the Jacob story, but not for here. His name and its meaning are alluded to in a strategic text found in the Haftarah in 2 weeks, Isaiah chapter 52, verse 12, which reads, For the Lord God will go before you. The God of Israel will be your rear guard. In other words, your Jacob. Interesting. The God of Israel will be your Jacob. Now, this verse immediately precedes the introduction to the classic text of Isaiah 53. You didn't need me to tell you that, because you're fully aware, because you, like Eddie, excel in math, that chapter 53 comes after chapter 52. Anyhow, so it leads into Isaiah 53, that classic text, which unveils the ultimate way in which God went before Jacob and his descendants and protected them and us. This is the core of the blessings God showered on Jacob the man and Jacob the people, and through them on the entire world, as Genesis 12:3 reminds us, as in fact we reflected on previously. And by that, I don't mean tonight, but other nights. And if the Jacob story is properly understood, then Jacob, who is called the Ishtam in Genesis 25, which means the complete person, if that story is properly understood, then Jacob serves as a pattern for the kind of God-expected lifestyle which is described, in fact, in our parsha. Hebrews 11:21. Jacob is described as faithful to God, faithfully following Him. And that's the pattern for us as well. But guess what? There's even more in our text. I told you I'd be talking too much on this, or too long in this text. It goes on to say, God will safeguard, better translation than keep, will safeguard His covenant of love with you. The Hebrew word translated keep is the word shamar, which is used to describe the watchmen or guards on the ancient city walls. Or later in history, it refers to the sentries who protected Israel's early kibbutzim. Now, they were responsible to be alert and to keep the cities or kibbutzim's inhabitants safe. And that is precisely how God will watch over and safeguard the covenant He made with our ancestors and thereby with us as well. He'll do so alertly and faithfully, securely and lovingly. In fact, in our parsha, the covenant itself, remember Habrit Chesed? The covenant itself is characterized and described as a covenant of love. And that's set up for us in the closing couple of verses of the text that precedes our parsha for this week, Isaiah 7, 8 and 9. Now you might ask, so what does Isaiah 7, 8 and 9 say? Well, I'm glad you asked. So here's what it says. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath He swore to your ancestors that He brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you. Know therefore that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping His covenant of love to a thousand generations of those who love Him and follow His guidelines. In other words, this is a covenant that comes, it's a covenant of love that comes from the God of love. It's a covenant of deep loving, of deep and abiding love, as the Hebrew chesed. Almost impossible to translate. The impact is something like profound, faithful love, as the Hebrew term chesed indicates. And by the way, our responsibility is similar to God's commitment, since the same Hebrew word, shamar, remember that one, is used for our relationship and our response to the covenant, often translated careful to follow. No, we safeguard it as we follow. In other words, we must alertly and lovingly treasure God's guidelines. And we've been set up for that in our service as we do it each week. As our response at the presentation of the Torah puts it, the Ark unveils its treasure before our eyes and our heart. The Torah stands there in all its richness. Please take note of this. The covenant found in our passage, described in our passage, is the very same one that God made with our ancestors at Mount Sinai. And it is called what? A covenant of love, not law. Don't make the mistake too many people make. Because, boy, then they turn this whole thing upside down. And although in some cases it's very interesting to live in an upside down world, if you get that, cool. If you don't, talk to someone who's cooler than you are and they'll fill you in. Anyhow, where was I? Upside down. You see, chesed is a very strong word used to describe God's unlimited graciousness, His overflowing compassion, and His unconditional commitment to us. And as such, it's at the very heart of Exodus 34, 6 and 7, where God, the giver of this covenant, from that same mountain, describes Himself to Moses. Remember? I'm the Lord your God, the one who overflows in this profound love, who is so compassionate that there is no way to circumscribe it, is literally how the Hebrew unfolds there. This beautiful text, which beautifully unwraps Chesed's broader meaning. If we truly realize, then, God's covenant with us at Sinai is a covenant of love, then we should be even more anxious and eager to carefully safeguard and gratefully, enthusiastically, wholeheartedly follow it. Now, this principle is further reinforced toward the end of our parsha. You'll remember the words, Deuteronomy 10, verses 12 and 13. And now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? We recited it. In this translation, except to listen carefully to all He says to you, and to obey for your own good. There's that lech lecha again. Well, pardon me, the lecha again. To obey for your own good His prescriptions, and to serve Him and love Him, and to worship Him with all your hearts and souls. It continues a few verses later. He is your praise, and He is your God, the one who, for you, lecha, has done mighty miracles you yourselves have seen. So, as a result, you must love the Lord your God and follow all His guidelines. Therefore, ours is to be a loving response to His loving commitment to us. One further thought. In the scroll, the Sefer Torah itself, this passage, as I showed you, is directly adjacent to the text of the Shema. It even begins with these words, Tishma'un, pay close attention. Tishma'un, which contains the very same letters as the Shema, directly across from the Shema. The implication is quite clear. If I'm really sincere about the Lord being my God, the only one whom I will serve, if I'm serious about loving Him with my whole heart, strength, and life, I will then more carefully and gratefully follow all His instructions in the Torah. And remember, lecha, it's for our good and our benefit. So we need to be far more careful then to treasure and follow God's guidelines in the Torah because we love Him. And the reward will be great. Reflecting yet again on Yeshua's words in Yochanan's Gospel, this time 14:23. If you love me and follow my guidelines, my Father and I will love you, and we will come to you and make our home with or within you. An amazing reward that's waiting for us there. Reminding us of the great compassion of our God is the Haftarah portion for tonight, which I'm not going to take the time to read, but I'm only going to share with you one section of it with which you will be familiar. It says, can the woman forget the child at her breast and not show pity on the infant from her womb? Even if these were to forget, still I would not forget you, for I have engraved you on the palms of my hand. That's the kind of compassion that He reaches out to us with and expects us to respond similarly in following Him. As if to put an exclamation point to all this, next week's parsha, which picks up in a few verses, next week's parsha provides reinforcement and encouragement. You may recollect or recall the scene. I hope you recollect it and not recall it, because some of you just don't look that old. The tribe stood at Mount Gerizim, and they recited the blessings for Israel whenever they follow God. Conversely, the curses which would befall the people were recited by those who stood on Mount Ebal. You know, down through the years I have wondered, why the curses from one and the blessings from the other? Why not the reverse? I got it. There's a hidden meaning in the names of the mountains. Is there? This is a commercial and a guilt trip. For you to understand the meaning that's here behind the text, you need to have taken, or you need to take, historical geography of the Bible. So now that I've set the stage, let's go back to these mountains. As back then, so even today, Mount Gerizim is still the one with blessings, is still green with trees and underbrush, whereas Mount Ebal remains brown and dusty. It's symbolic, even in our day and age, of the picture, the message of this action. And so the parsha underscores, and the mountains reinforce once again, how important it is for God's people to listen to His instructions and then to go about doing them. And thereby, we get to enjoy all that He has in store for us. And the reward, as we've come to understand it, will be great. So what's it to be? Our heels or our hearts? Your choice, not only tonight, but as you go through your walk in life. So begin that choice, or reinforce that choice in quiet for the next minute or so.